NDR Info. Nachtclub.
So bei mir im Studio in der zweiten Stunde sind Charlie und Sean von der Band Shame aus London. Und sie kommen beide gleich zu Wort. Erstmal Musik von ihrem aktuellen Debütalbum Songs of Praise. Hier ist Concrete. Das war Concrete von dem Album Songs of Praise. Das Debütalbum von Shame aus London. Charlie und Sean von der Band sind bei mir jetzt im Studio. Hi, how you doing?
Hello there.
Hello, good how to see you?
I'm fine, yeah. And you say you're glad to be back in Hamburg, which surprised me. I didn't know you knew Hamburg this well, but obviously you feel almost at home here now.
We know the pubs very well. We don't know the city.
I think it
well.
Was the first time we came here. It was for the Reeper Bump. It was the first time we got to spend more than like a day somewhere in Europe. So we had like 5 days here or something, and it was just a terrible idea.
So we spent it in a pub. Yeah. What was the pub called again?
Hong Kong Bar.
Hong Kong Bar, yeah.
Right, okay.
That's our habitat.
Yeah.
So you didn't actually get around to writing new songs during that period or anything like that?
We haven't since then. That was 2 years ago. So.
And so the rot set in as soon as you've been into this bar.
Yeah, basically.
Much. I'd say long before that, but it really festered.
Yeah, the erosion. I mean, we started in a pub called the Queen's Head in Brixton. And I think that was when the erosion began.
It's our safe place. You know?
So if you start in a pub, then that's a bad start, isn't it? Because it can only go downhill from there, really.
Yeah, you take shelter in the shadows.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, die sind schon ein paar Mal in Hamburg gewesen, also keine Neulinge, was Hamburg betrifft. Fühlen sich eigentlich ziemlich heimisch hier. Das erste Mal, dass sie hier waren, waren, als sie beim Reeperbahn-Festival eingeladen waren. Dann waren sie 5 Tage auf einmal hier und sie lernten die ganzen Bars der Stadt kennen, vor allem die Hongkong-Bar. So eine legendäre Bar und sie meinte, die waren schon ganz schön fertig, nachdem sie wirklich fast rund um die Uhr in diesen Bars waren. Und aber sie haben schon so eine lange bewegte Geschichte, was Kneipen betrifft. Die Band im Prinzip wurde in einer Kneipe in London gegründet, die Queen's Head. Und daher gesehen, das ist so ihr vertrautes Zuhause. Und sie sind nicht dazu gekommen, als in Hamburg waren, neue Songs zu schreiben. Und sie meinen, seit 2 Jahren haben sie keine neuen Songs geschrieben. Because this is a debut album. People think of a debut album as being an album which was probably just written over a concentrated period of time. But, I mean, it's often the case that, I mean, there's some usually really old tracks on it when people were kind of like teenagers or whatever, you know. Mm. And is that the case in your case, or are they all relatively new songs, or did you start when you were about 12 writing them?
No, we are. It's so that record's over the period of 3 years, from when we were like 16 to 19, when we were writing all of those songs. I mean, One RZA was the first song we ever wrote, which was like the leading single to the album coming out. But I think definitely, I think, you know, I mean, there's that saying that everybody's talking about now because it's particularly relevant, where you have your entire life to write your first album and 10 minutes to write your second.
Yeah.
And we did have a lot of time and we went, you know, I think in TikTok. The album.
So do you feel like the 10 minutes are up now for the second album?
I know, we're not really under any particular pressure to, you know. But we do write when we can, but we're just touring so much, you know, and that's kind of what we're focused on at the moment.
Mm. I mean, at what point do you think, looking back, did you start taking it seriously, or haven't you even reached that point yet?
I think we always took it seriously, but it's just when other people took us seriously.
Yeah. I'd say we still kind of take it all pretty tongue in cheek, because it is quite funny, you know.
Yeah.
In as a whole, yeah.
Yeah, we don't. You know, there's not enough money to take ourselves seriously. No egos can properly develop, but
it's not like Fleetwood Mac in the 1970s.
I know.
Not yet.
Maybe me and Charlie will have a romantic engagement and write a whole album about the breakup.
Yeah, you things you got to do to get a hit.
Yeah, also das Debütalbum ist relativ neu, erschien im Januar, aber besteht natürlich zum Teil aus relativ alten Songs, weil das Album entstand über einen Zeitraum von 3 Jahren. Das heißt, sie waren also zwischen 16 und 19 Jahren alt, als sie die Songs komponiert haben. Und das Lied One Rizzler war das erste Lied, das sie jemals komponiert haben. Das war die erste Single von dem Album. Insofern ist es schon ein Stück Geschichte. Und er meinte, es ist schon ein Klischee-Gedanke, dass man sein ganzes Leben hat, um sein erstes Album zu schreiben. Und dann hat man nur noch 10 Minuten, um das zweite Album zu schreiben. Er meinte, sie merken schon natürlich, dass sie unter gewissem Maßen unter Druck stehen. Aber sie empfinden es nicht wirklich als Druck. Sie sind immer noch relativ entspannt. Und sie nehmen sich schon ernst, sie haben sich immer ernst genommen. Nur der Unterschied ist, meinte, dass irgendwann kamen andere Leute auf die Idee, sie ernst zu nehmen. Und dann wurde das Ganze natürlich ernster. Aber dann immer noch so einen Sinn für Spaß. Und sie finden es auch alles ein bisschen lustig, eigentlich, so die Aufmerksamkeit, die sie bekommen haben. So, we're going to hear maybe One Rizzler is a good... I mean, there might be people out there who have never actually heard the song, so...
I'm sure there are thousands, isn't it?
So it's kind
billions,
of...
Billions.
So it's a bit like your sort of... like Elton John's Your Song. It's your equivalent, I suppose, isn't it, really? It's like right.
Can't say we've ever been compared to Elton John before.
Yeah, well,
I like it.
I've already compared to Fleetwood Mac and to Elton John now, within the space of 5 minutes.
Sir Elton John.
We should have brought our other guitarist because he speaks fluent German.
So oh right, okay.
Don't know why we didn't think of that.
But I mean, talk about Elton John. You weren't invited then to the wedding, to the royal wedding. Elton John was sitting there, but you weren't there.
No,
you have to wait another few years for that.
We were sitting in the back of a van, happily not watching it.
Yeah, okay. So One Wristland, how does it feel actually to play this song now? Because it's a few years on, and does it seem as important now as it did when you started?
I think a lot of people ask us this question because of how many gigs we played. Like, you know, from January until now, we've played 100 gigs this year already. But I think the different elements that are composed when we play in a live performance with, like, the venue, the crowd, the area, the city, the country.
How you're feeling.
That's what sort of makes it refreshing, and that's what makes it new, and that's what makes it interesting. And I think...
It's always nice to have people singing along.
Yeah, well. And if you
that
can,
didn't happen in the old days.
If you can play, if you can play these songs in your sleep and perform them without much thought, then it definitely allows you to sort of invent a new way to make it particularly interesting to yourself.
Mm-hmm. And that applies to all the songs, I suppose, not just to this one. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, they're all we play them thousands of times. But it's just more about the crowd and the environment, and yeah.
Okay. Ja, wir hören dieses Stück One Rizzler, wie gesagt, die allererste Single, beziehungsweise das erste Lied, das sie jemals gemeinsam komponiert haben, als sie 16 waren. Und sie sagen, dass für sie ist das Lied immer noch frisch und immer noch neu irgendwie. Sie haben das zwar tausende Mal gespielt, die ganzen Songs haben sie ganz, ganz oft gespielt. Die haben schon 100 Konzerte gehabt, dieses Jahr schon. Aber sie empfinden es immer wieder als erfrischend und neu, weil die Situation immer neu ist. Es gibt immer neue Kulisse, eine andere Stadt, ein anderes Publikum. Und damit können sie gedeihen eigentlich quasi. So gefühlsmäßig gibt es immer eine Erneuerung. Und auch wenn ein Lied alt ist, spielt es keine Rolle, weil sie dann das Gefühl haben, dass es immer wieder eine neue Erfahrung ist. Dasselbe Lied, aber irgendwie eine andere Erfahrung. Also wir hören das Stück jetzt, One Rizzler von Shame, von dem Album Songs of Praise. So das war One Rizzler von Shame, von dem Album Songs of Praise. Und bei mir im Studio sind Charlie und Sean von der Band. I think it's interesting because, to my mind, the way I perceive you, you seem to strike an interesting balance between being really, really serious. That's what I was asking before about how serious you are. Because, and being like a fun band. And often people are like either one or the other, you know what I mean? And seem to be either a bit trivial, a bit frivolous, or ultra serious, like Fugazi or something. And getting that balancing act, I think, is quite interesting. But you come over as being quite humorous, but also at times dead, really dead serious. Is that right?
Yeah, I think you know, when we play live, I think in the beginning, or when people were like writing about us as a journalist, sort of came about it with this preconception that we were really aggressive and that we were always sort of angry. And of course there are elements of anger in our music and in our live performance, but humour's always been a massive thing because, I mean, it's just quite a British approach. Like, you know, it's a lot of satire, it's a lot of irony, and it's something that entertains ourselves because it is entertainment, a live performance. I just think at the end of the day, like, we're just having fun. We're getting to go around the world at the age of 20.
We don't
21.
Really think about it too much, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously got to be like a certain degree of sort of like seriousness so that like the performance isn't transparent. But on the whole, like, we're just enjoying ourselves.
Right, okay. Ja, sie sagen, dass sie schon auf der einen Seite sehr ernst sind in ihrer Attitüde, auf der anderen Seite sind sie schon humorvoll und haben Sinn für Spaß. Er meinte, dass am Anfang ihrer Karriere hat man diese Wahrnehmung gehabt, dass die Band extrem so verbissen und aggressiv sei und sehr trocken. Und er meinte, das entsprach der Wahrheit überhaupt nicht. Er meinte, Humor war immer eine wichtige Sache für sie und es beinhaltet auch viel Satire und Ironie. Aber er meinte, so eine gewisse Ebene, so der Ernsthaftigkeit, ist wirklich notwendig, um überhaupt, dass es überhaupt eine sinnvolle Aktion ist. Wenn es natürlich alles nur trivial und frivol ist, dann bringt es einfach nichts. Und er meint, dass es ist, ich denke schon, dass es wichtig ist, die richtige Gratwanderung zu finden. Und Sean meinte einfach, um das zu relativieren, dass sie eigentlich gar nicht so viel darüber nachdenken. Sie machen einfach ihr Ding. Und sie denken schon, dass sie letztendlich so die richtige Mischung hinbekommen. Is it the case that you've been actually more inspired by new music or old music, or do you actually differentiate between the two? I mean, if you probably got Spotify or whatever, I mean, so if you're listening to a band from like the early 80s, does it seem any different to you than listening to a band from 2018? I mean, how do you perceive it? And I mean, do you actually feel that you're drawing from all sorts of different eras, or do you think you're actually trying to push the envelope and forge something brand new?
I mean, I think Sean and the rest of the band are the people who write all the music. So, like, I think, you know.
I think when it comes to that, I don't think there's, like, ever consciously, you know, you look at one artist and think, you know, I want to sound like them or whatever. It just kind of, like, just comes naturally to whatever, you know, you don't realise it at the time, but whatever you happen to be listening to, whether it be new or old or whatever, it just kind of just has an impact, you know. Mm-hmm. I know, I don't think we think about it too much. I think at the same time also, like, we want to be, you know, inventive and, you know, try not to be. But at this point in music, it's pretty hard not to sound like someone else in some way or another. So, you know, just try not to think about it too much and just keep on writing.
Just plough on.
It is not working.
Yeah. The good writers write and the great writers steal.
Sorry? What do you say?
The good writers write and the great writers steal.
Yeah,
we do not steal. Let me just clarify, right?
T.S. Eliot.
Yeah, klar. Yeah. Ja, Sie sagen auch, dass Sie schon bemüht sind, innovativ zu sein. Sie wollen schon versuchen, irgendwie irgendwas Neues zu schaffen. Aber es ist sehr schwierig in der heutigen Zeit, sowas eigentlich zu tun, weil es hat natürlich Rockmusik schon so lange gegeben. Und wenn Sie alte Musik hören oder neue Musik, und die unterscheiden eigentlich gar nicht so groß, also was das Datum betrifft, der Entstehung dieser Musik, sondern es geht einfach nur darum, ob die Musik für Sie interessant ist. Und Sie denken, Sie letztendlich sind Sie unbewusst. Wenn Sie sind Sie unbewusst, dann beeinflusst von dem, was Sie konsumieren. Und Sie möchten schon ganz gerne irgendwie originell sein, aber das ist leichter gesagt als getan. Und er hat gerade T.S. Eliot zitiert, der gesagt hat, dass das großartigen Schreiber, dass sie tatsächlich geistigen Diebstahl bestehen, weil ihnen nichts anderes übrig bleibt, dass man ein bisschen was klauen muss aus der Vergangenheit, um was Tolles, Neues dann zu schaffen. It seems to me, I mean, if I didn't know how young you were, I do feel it seems like a mature debut album. I mean, it's more mature than you would expect. You know, I mean, it sounds more like an album that somebody would make, like the third album or something. You know what I mean? I mean, did you kind of practice loads before you started then, or what? Before you actually dared to actually go out and perform?
No.
Or is it just the production which makes it sound better than it really is?
We did the opposite. We did the opposite.
Yeah.
We started playing with only four songs and like 3 gigs a week.
That was after like a month, maybe.
Yeah,
we did our first show.
A month after being a band, we did our first show, and we haven't stopped since then.
Right.
I think maybe in regards to like the production, we tried like 7 or 8 different producers before we settled on Dan Foote, Nathan Boddy, and Sean Gnocchi. And I think they were definitely a big impact in sort of like getting the sound that we wanted to achieve. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the album Songs of Praise was written over a 3-year period, which is, you know, a lot happens to you from when you're 16 to 19. And as well as, like, all the different environments and musicians and bands you're exposed to and influenced by. So, yeah.
Well, a fair few of those songs as well, because of how much we played in the early days. Like, if anything, we'd gig more than we'd actually kind of spend in a rehearsal room working on songs. Yeah. So, you know, kind of.
So you're
like,
learning your trade that way as well.
Yeah, over time, like, everyone got better at their individual instruments. And, like, when it came to them rehearsing, you know, once you've played that song like 30 times and seen it in front of a bunch of different crowds, you know, you can kind of, like, get a much better perception of what needs changing. Or, you know, that's how we just play gigs relentlessly. You know, mm-hmm. on school nights, playing like three nights a week, whatever, not really thinking about it too much. It's pretty funny.
So it's just
some strange gigs in those early days.
We still are.
Yeah.
And do you feel that you've actually really become well established now in your home country, in England? Do you, and not necessarily household names, but I mean, do you think you've got to a level now where you can actually say that you're properly established?
Well, I think the British press especially love to call pretty much every guitar band that comes through kind of the new saviors of guitar music. So you kind of obviously naturally try not to get caught up in all of that because, you know, it can be a pretty fleeting moment. So
okay.
I think we're just focused.
You're trying not to be a fleeting moment.
No, I think our focus isn't that stuff. It's more so just, you know, keep on playing, hope it doesn't kill us, and maybe write some new songs.
Yeah. And are you feeling still kind of quite robust?
Yeah, very much so, actually. This doesn't feel like the end of a four-month tour, right, to be honest. I feel like we've... I don't know, I think we've all individually
learned to differ on that one.
Yeah.
Learned to, I don't know. Everybody has their off days, you know.
Yeah, okay. Right, you're the sensitive one.
Yeah.
We. I think it's really weird knowing how close we are to getting home. And it has been 4 months. So it's very strange.
We've just skipped, you know, my thing is we've just skipped out winter.
Yeah.
Pretty much. We've just like completely skipped out winter.
That's by just avoiding cold places.
Yeah, pretty much. We've been to a few cold places.
You've been playing in the Canary Islands or what?
Australia, America.
Australia wasn't very cold.
Jamaica, Wisconsin, Algeria.
Algeria?
No.
talking rubbish.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, also die sagen, dass das Debütalbum relativ reif und ausgereift klingt. Einmal, weil sie natürlich 3 Jahre gebraucht haben, um das tatsächlich fertigzustellen. In der Zeit haben sie ihr Handwerk ein bisschen so beherrschen können. Einfach, sie haben so viele Konzerte gespielt, dass sie langsam einfach souveräner geworden sind, kompetenter geworden sind. Aber sie geben auch zu, dass es auch an der Produktion liegt. Sie haben also 2 Produzenten genommen, Dan Foote und Nathan Boddy. Und das war so der Sound, den sie unbedingt angestrebt haben. Und die hatten schon so 6 oder 7 verschiedene Produzenten ausprobiert, bis sie sich für die beiden entschieden haben. Und sie sind sehr zufrieden mit dem Ergebnis. Und deshalb klingt das Album auch für die Verhältnisse von sehr jungen Musikern natürlich eigentlich ziemlich gut und ziemlich souverän. Und sie sind schon sehr froh mit dem Ergebnis. Was den Bekanntheitsgrad betrifft, in England ist es schon, die sind deutlich weiter als hier. Aber das ist auch mit Vorsicht zu genießen, weil sie sagen auch, dass in England dann feiert man ganz groß, wenn eine neue Gitarrenband ins Leben gerufen wird. Und man muss aufpassen, dass man nicht so eine Eintagsfliege ist. Und sie hoffen natürlich, dass sie eine gewisse Langlebigkeit dann genießen können. So what do you want to hear next then? It's interesting that there are tracks which are quite long on it, like Angie, for example, as well. Mm-hmm. I was thinking that probably doesn't get played on the radio that often, does it?
No, it doesn't.
So would you fancy going
for that? We didn't have the foresight to do a radio edit either.
Yeah.
No.
It was never actually intended. That was one of the few songs that a fair bit of it was written in the actual studio when recording the album.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a nice sentimental one.
Yeah. No, so I was asking you what you want to hear next. I more or less told you we're going to hear Angie now.
We're used to that.
Okay, but I mean, is it a sentimental one? I mean, is Angie somebody you know?
To me, no, personally, I meant it was sentimental because we wrote it. Like, we wrote a majority of it whilst we were recording the album.
Okay.
We extended it.
Extended it and stuff like that. So I think that's, in terms of like the album, it's sentimental, but it's just a story.
The only time they let me do a guitar solo, also.
All right, so pretend you're from the 1970s then.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Richie Blackmore. Yeah, okay. Oh, but Angie is a fictitious person, or is there a true story behind it?
Well, it's a person, you know, a person we're very close to. It's a story he told at the Queen's Head. It's a person we know very well, and it's a story that they told us, and it might be true, and it most probably isn't true. But it's just interesting. And again, that was like, you know, when we were 17.
Right. Ja, das Lied, das wir jetzt hören, ist besonders lang, das längste Stück auf dem Album, Angie. Und sie sagen, dass sie auch eine sentimentale Beziehung zu diesem Song, weil es tatsächlich im Studio entstanden ist. Also die haben ziemlich viel von dem Song im Studio komponiert eigentlich und er schon durfte sogar ein Gitarrensoli spielen. Das war das erste und einzige Mal, dass er das überhaupt durfte. Und die Geschichte hinter dem Lied ist die Geschichte von dieser Person Angie. Und ob die Geschichte wirklich stimmt, wissen sie nicht. Aber es ist eine Geschichte, die sie gehört haben in dieser Kneipe in the Queen's Head. You don't want to be more specific about the story then, presumably?
No, you just leave it up to interpretation.
I feel like this is the closest I'm ever going to get to being able to speak a foreign language.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah, no, just leave it open to interpretation. It's about suicide.
Okay. So das Lied handelt von Selbstmord, aber was die eigentliche Bedeutung der Texte betrifft, ist offen zur Interpretation. Und es basiert, wie gesagt, auf einer Geschichte, die sie in dieser Kneipe, die Queen's Head, gehört haben in London, wo sie angefangen haben. Und das Lied ist schon also 3 Jahre alt. Also hier ist jetzt Angie von dem Album Songs of Praise von Shame. So das war Angie von dem Album Songs of Praise von Shame. Bei mir im Studio habe ich 2 Mitglieder von der Band, also Charlie und Sean. Was it? I mean, it must have been deliberate cover. Obviously, it's if music is quite vigorous and dynamic, people wouldn't expect you to be kind of cuddling animals on the front. I suppose
we like a good juxtaposition.
This is another main thing to do with humour.
Yeah,
like, you know, we found it really funny, and I think like a lot of people thought it was from like the Beach Boys, but it was more like Frobin Gristle, like 20 greatest jazz funk hits.
Okay.
So it was just, yeah, like Sean said, a contrast, a juxtaposition, just to
I think just because especially in like the press and stuff, people were kind of, were being painted as quite serious, angry characters, and we were like, you know, we were just like, so let's just do something, you know, that kind of throws people, because you wouldn't look at that album and the album title and, you know,
and expect post-punk.
Expect what it sounds like.
No,
you
of course
know,
not,
so,
no.
Yeah. And it was originally, the original idea actually we wanted, logistically was a nightmare, was we all wanted to be riding horses towards a camera, but yeah, as you can imagine, that didn't happen.
Well,
we suggested
it
on a conference call once.
Do you all ride horses?
The silence was deafening.
You all horse riders?
Sean was the one who came up with the name for the album though.
Okay.
And well, obviously it's off the BBC, like Hymns TV show.
Well, I mean, because a lot of people here won't know, well, most people in Germany won't know the show,
yeah,
Songs
yeah.
of Praise.
It's like a...
And it still exists, because
yeah.
only... It
does
on,
still exist, yeah.
When I was a kid, there was Songs of Praise on a Sunday, yeah. So
all live
great
God.
Fun. Great
Jesus
fun.
Christ.
Yeah.
Hymns, old people.
And has it changed the programme? Has it got more modern in the way it's presented?
Honestly, I have not watched it
I've never watched it in a while.
I think I caught my grandmother watching it not long ago, and I think that was initially where I thought, that's quite funny. We might call the second one Cash in the Attic and just like, just see how long we can keep naming albums after TV shows until someone sues us.
Yeah, so there's no religious experiences actually behind this album then? You didn't have conversion experiences or anything like that?
No,
but there's a lot of Portuguese people on the internet who think we're...
Portuguese
we're
people?
A Christian punk band, yeah.
I thought the Americans would think that, but the Portuguese think it.
I did do a lot of preaching, which was, you know, like, irony on stage.
There was a lot of preaching in America.
A lot of preaching, but obviously the irony isn't, like, a part of the brain that's really developed over there. So that added
No, I think it was, we got announced that we were playing some, I think maybe it was Benny Kassim on some Portuguese music thing on Facebook, and all the comments were like, finally a Christian punk band, and you know, stuff like this. Yeah. I'm down.
Well, the Portuguese just happened to think that is amazing.
Goes with the humour.
Or maybe they show the Songs of Praise show on in Portugal with subtitles.
Fair, Christian rock market, not a bad one to get into. So
yeah.
I've heard.
Yeah. Okay, well, they'll soon catch you out in America if you pretend to be a Christian rock band. They'll find out you're not very soon, though, aren't they? Won't they?
Yeah, that's fine with me. I'm happy to be burned at the stake. I have to pay for my sins. Actually, it takes 4 hours to die if you're on a crucifix, if you're crucified.
That's an interesting fact. Have you been listening to...
No, I'm not sure when they're going to translate that now, actually. Whether it's really, really suitable for a radio show. I'm not
come
quite
on, Charlie.
It is
if you're
religious.
Love
yeah.
And you truly want to show your love to God.
Yeah. What? Yeah, so that's cover for name album, Songs of Praise. That's in die two von der Band abgebildet, sie umarmen Schweine. Ja, die haben so wie sie halten die Schweine, als ob man irgendwie so eine Katze halten würde oder einen Hund halten würde, also ein Haustier. Und das war natürlich dann humorvoll gedacht und humorvoll gemeint, weil man bei solcher so Post-Punk-Musik oder Punk-Musik würde man natürlich so Kuscheltiere-Bilder nicht erwarten. Und das war auch durchaus beabsichtigt dann. Und dann außerdem heißt es auch Songs of Praise. Also Lieder des religiösen Lobes eigentlich. Es gibt eine ganz berühmte Fernsehsendung in England bei der BBC, die Songs of Praise heißt, im Prinzip eine Gottesdienst-Sendung, die schon seit Jahrzehnten in England läuft an einem Sonntag. Und sie haben den Titel quasi geliehen, obwohl sie die Sendung nicht kennen und obwohl die Band nicht religiös ist. Was there any kind of serious idea being Songs of Praise and anything about the Songs of Intensity or anything like that? Was it just purely...
No. I think it was just like...
This, just funny.
It was literally the day before we had to basically finalise the name and
no,
the artwork.
It was the day of.
It was the day of, actually.
About
we were going around to
our
manager's house to kind of do up some artwork. I think it was the album was going to be called Yes, with an exclamation mark. And I got the bus with Charlie and I was just like, what do you think of Songs of Praise? And we just thought, that's hilarious.
We were on the bus to Streatham Hill and our manager was sitting in there. That was, we were going to his flat and we had to design like the whole album artwork aesthetic.
Right.
And come up with the name.
Really, really
like
quickly.
7 p.m. was a midnight. Deadline was at midnight.
Very close.
Okay.
It's close to the wire on that.
Ja, das Album ist, heißt eher zufällig Songs of Praise. Sie standen unter Zeitdruck, also die mussten sehr schnell entscheiden, wie das Cover aussehen sollte und bis Mitternacht an einem bestimmten Tag und die dann kam schon auf diese Idee und die hatten im Prinzip keine Zeit mehr, groß darüber zu diskutieren. Also sollte man den Songtitel nicht so richtig ernst nehmen. There are other kind of names who are bandied about, maybe in the same kind of context as you, like Ice Age or Savages, bands like that. Are those bands that you really rate?
I honestly, the new Ice Age album is absolutely brilliant. I've always been a fan of those dudes, but still haven't seen them live. I don't know. Actually, no. Do you know any of Savage's stuff?
I don't know. I heard stuff like a year ago, and I liked it.
But it's quite old album now. It's about 3 years old, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, well, they're not really a band anymore, are they?
No, I think they're kind of they're not really functioning properly anymore. No.
But Ice Age, yeah, they're pretty amazing.
Sean's been playing the Ice Age album in the van. That sounds really good.
Yeah, I was pretty blown away by that, to be honest.
Yeah.
So there are no bands they actually feel in competition with, just bands you happen to admire rather than there's no... In the old days, used to be competition between bands. But is that
I think
okay?
There is healthy competition, but I think it's very friendly and I don't think it's necessarily as bitter as some of the rivalries were back in, you know, like in the Britpop days.
I think we might not be in, like, international
We're not really intimidating enough, I think, to have, like, a real rivalry with anyone.
It's like
we're like a fly.
You're not
to
rude
be
enough. I think
competition is mainly at this size is targeted to the areas that we come from. So like being in South London, all of those different bands, it is that healthy competition. We're talking on a national scale. We're not battling Ice Age to play a 2,000 cap room in Houston, Texas.
Right.
Like that's probably still got a few years to go.
Yeah.
But I think we're just doing what we want to do. We don't make many friends.
I don't know about that.
Sometimes the ones we do make.
Maybe you don't make any friends.
a lot of bands we meet at festivals don't like us. But then we're touring with a band called RVG.
Oh, you're too difficult, are you?
No.
No, they just don't like us.
I don't know. I'd say we've met quite a lot of people. We've become pretty friendly with over.
Yeah, you tend to meet people fleetingly. That's the problem, isn't it? You're kind of like you're here to dangle.
Well, there's also a fair amount of you meet a lot of people and it's very kind of bland conversation. Yeah, it's like, how was your gig?
They're very professional.
Good.
Ja, sie respektieren bestimmte Zeitgenossen wie Ice Age und Savages, obwohl Savages eigentlich wahrscheinlich nicht mehr richtig existiert, aber das neue Ice Age-Album finden sie großartig. Aber sie empfinden schon ein gewisses Konkurrenzdenken, aber auf gesunde Art und Weise. Es ist nicht irgendwie ungesund, es ist nicht irgendwie verbittert und sie denken, dass sie eigentlich nicht genügend Profil haben und auch nicht größenwahnsinnig genug sind und überhaupt richtig Konkurrenzdenken zu erwecken. Sie denken, dass die Leute sie nicht so ernst nehmen als Konkurrenz eigentlich. Und die kommen aus dem südlichen Teil von London. Da gibt es viele Bands. Und es gibt schon eine gesunde Rivalität, aber nie irgendwie, wo sie das Gefühl haben, es ist ein unangenehmes Gefühl eigentlich. Und jetzt hören wir was von der besagten Band Ice Age aus Dänemark. Das neue Album heißt Beyondless und wir hören das Stück Catch It. So das war Catch It von Ice Age aus Dänemark von ihrem neuen Album Beyondless. Und bei mir im Studio sind immer noch Charlie und Sean von der Band Shame aus London. Do you think it's relevant from the south of London as opposed to another part of London? I mean, you came from that scene. I mean, do you think it influenced your mindset? And do you think it's influenced the music as such? If you've been from another part of London or if you've been from Liverpool or something?
It does quite often in London get billed as being South London, but I think that's because a lot of the bands kind of made a name for themselves or came through the Windmill, which is a venue in South London. But there's people, you know, all the bands that play there from all over London, really.
Right.
So it's only really us relevant. And Goat Girl who are from South.
We're not being biased to, like, other parts of the country because obviously there's an incredible amount of music coming out of every city in the UK as well as, like, you know, spanning across the globe. But I think with us, like, we were very influenced with the environment that we were in. We were teenagers.
I think also...
And it was like the Queen's Head was, like, such an artistic... experience.
Then the Fat White Family come from that place.
Fat White Family, the Alabama Three, the Ruts, Stiff Little Fingers. You had like a constant stream of creatives coming through, and I think that definitely did help us sort of like.
Discovering the actual tradition. So actually, do feel part of a tradition in that sense.
Yeah, discovering the Windmill, I think, was because in those early days, just after we started gigging, we played so many gigs on kind of these mismatched lineups. Where you never really end up playing with anyone you liked, or but then as soon as we started playing at the Windmill, for the first time we actually played with bands, we were like, oh, these guys are really good, you know. And I think that was definitely a big thing because it was nice to know that there wasn't just a load of, well,
so it's all quite
it was nice being surrounded by like-minded people.
It's all quite incestuous,
yeah,
in London or South London.
Okay. And that's where you actually grew up. You actually grew up in that area.
We were all born in South.
You're actually born in South London as well. Okay, right. Ja, Sie kommen aus Südlondon, wie gesagt, und die sagen schon, es ist wichtig, es ist relevant, dass Sie aus der Gegend kommen, weil Sie da geboren sind, aufgewachsen sind. Und es gibt schon eine lange Tradition von Bands, die aus dieser Ecke kommen, wie The Roots und Slipped Little Fingers und Fat White Family. Und Sie meinen, es ist schon so eine Art so Familienangelegenheit gewissermaßen, schon seit Jahrzehnten. Und es war ganz wichtig, dass Sie angefangen haben, diesem Club The Windmill zu spielen. Und die haben sich schon sehr heimisch gefühlt. Und Sie denken schon, dass Ihre Mentalität wirklich von diesem Umfeld geprägt worden ist. Would you actually regard it as being part of a working class London tradition? Is that relevant to you, the kind of the class ethos or not? Or do you think that's just a...
Well, I think at the Windmill, what was so interesting about that and at the Queen's Head was it was such like a range of people who would be coming in there, like I said before. And that goes with the Windmill. You'd have like the old locals who'd be sitting at the pub who live in the council estate behind it. And then you'd have all the art students coming in. And then you'd have all the bartenders. And then you'd have people who would want to be DJing in techno bands or being in rock bands. And that any idea of that is sort of dissolved. And all that comes down to is your politics, is who you're based on and what you're trying to produce. And I think that's what was so interesting for us. And I think you can get that in a very few amount of places in London at the moment because of gentrification that's shoving a lot of people out and sort of causing a lot of judgment and a lot of hatred towards each other. But I think...
So it was a very wholesome place to actually grow up.
It was a community.
You know, there'd be people obviously come from rich backgrounds who would also go into bands and people who'd come from, you know, next to nothing. But it was nice and no one really cared. No one really cares.
It was just creative because it's not all about the bands at the end of the day. Like, it's the promoters, the photographers, the, you know, film directors and the, you know, it's everyone. The lights guy, the sound man. And so, like I said before, it just... The Queen's Head and the Windmill in Brixton felt like two communities, and you're a part of it rather than.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ja, die sind schon ganz begeistert, also von ihrer Herkunft eigentlich, dass sie dann in dieser Gegend quasi aufwachsen durften und dass sie da angefangen haben, wirklich Musik zu machen. Dort ist die Band ins Leben gerufen worden. Und sie sagen, es ist eine ganz bestimmte Atmosphäre da, eine ganz bestimmte Wertevorstellung in dieser Gegend, wo es wirklich eine Gemeinschaft gibt, ein richtig ausgeprägter Sinn von einer Gemeinschaft, einer Zusammengehörigkeit, unabhängig von der Schicht, wo man herkommt. Er meinte, es ist so eine bunte Mischung in dieser Kneipe, die Queen's Head gewesen, in dieser Windmill. Also Arm und Reich sitzen quasi nebeneinander. Da gibt es die Arbeiterklasse aus den Hochhäusern, die dann wirklich nur um die Ecke wohnen. Und dann sind wiederum Intellektuelle und Akademiker auch da, Leute aus reichem Zuhause. So eine bunte Mischung ist eine Seltenheit, meinte er in London. Und daher denkt er, das ist schon was ganz Besonderes. Und ansonsten ist es oft so, dass die Arbeiterklasse vertrieben worden ist, also aus vielen Gegenden. Und von daher gesehen weiß er das zu schätzen, dass sie so ein gesundes Umfeld dann gehabt haben. So, do you think like the sky's the limit? I mean, have you thought in terms of longevity now? I mean, Savages, you say, have already broken up. So that's not that happened to you. I mean, do you feel you've actually got it in you to carry on functioning together as a band with little friction between you and be creative for a long time?
I think
there's
always going to be friction because that's the reality of a situation. Like, we're very open and we're very outspoken and we're not trying to hide or repress anything to an extent that's going to damage us. But we've always thought about the longevity of it from the beginning of the band. And I don't think we have, like, targets particularly, apart from, like, probably selling out Brixton Academy. But we've just...
Pretty big target.
Which is like...
And then you retire after that.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's like the... That's like
I can't
the,
be bothered.
That's like the, yeah, it's like the pipe. That was always the pipe dream.
I think also for us, like, because of how, you know, incessantly we've been touring over this past year, I think if anything... I mean, I think there was a lot more friction in the early days, but I think now when it comes to the point where you know pretty much everything about each other, if anything, I think it's a good sign that things have gotten easier and there's barely any arguments at this point. And yeah, I think we can, as long as we don't actually kill ourselves touring and actually, you know, give ourselves time to do another album, I think we'll be just fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Ja, ich fragte nach dem Wunsch also für Langlebigkeit. Und Sie haben schon bestätigt, dass als Sie angefangen haben, haben Sie schon so einen langfristigen Plan gehabt. Sie wollen wirklich, dass die Band von Dauer ist. Und Sie haben schon das Gefühl, dass Sie es hinbekommen können. So, Reibungen wird es immer geben innerhalb der Band, aber Sie haben das Gefühl tendenziell, dass es eher besser geworden ist, dass es harmonischer geworden ist als früher. Die sind ein bisschen vernünftiger geworden. Und die haben am Anfang diesen Wunsch gehabt, die Brixton Academy zu füllen. How many people go in the Brixton Academy?
5,000.
5,000, okay.
No, no, no.
I have not the slightest.
4,800?
Yeah, okay. It's pretty big.
Ja, also vor ungefähr 5,000 Leute passen da rein. Also wenn sie das geschafft haben irgendwann, dann haben sie das Gefühl, dass sie wirklich angekommen sind. Das ist immer noch so der Traum. Aber das ist nicht das Wichtigste. Die haben nicht wirklich ganz bestimmte Ziele in der Hinsicht, sondern das einzige richtige Ziel ist künstlerisch. Die wollen einfach weiter zusammenarbeiten. Well, it's very good to talk to you. Thanks for coming down to talk to me.
Thank you very much for having us.
And hope to hear a new album soon. And have a good time tonight.
I hope
Thank
so
you
too.
Very much, man. Cheers, mate.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, and what do you want to hear to finish off?
Friction?
Friction.
Friction,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Friction.
Talking about Friction, okay.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, wenn jetzt Friction zum Schluss, das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Basketball. Meine Studiogäste waren Charlie und Sean von der Band Shame. Und hier ist wieder ein Stück von dem Album Songs of Praise. Hier ist Friction. Und ich wünsche euch eine gute Nacht.
Dankeschön.
NDR Info. Nachrichten.